So let's go ahead and call the November 5th meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order. And as always, we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And for the last time, Gina, roll call.
Mayor Pruitt.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw.
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Here.
Councilmember Todd.
Here.
Councilmember Bond.
Here.
Councilmember Steckler.
Here.
Councilmember Vignell.
Here.
Okay, first up is audience communication, and we have John Reamer followed by Carmen Fisher. 3 minutes, name, address.
Name, John Reamer, address, 831 148th Street Southeast here in Mill Creek. As you all know, I do a lot of veteran stuff for the city, but what you probably don't know is I also do this for the city of Linwood, so I help them do an adoption of one of the ships out at Navy Base Everett. So I get to go to their city councils a lot, too. The difference between Linwood City Council meetings and Mill Creek City Council meetings, I don't know if you've ever been to any of them, is night and day. It is truly, truly amazing the difference that the people have, the attitude towards their council members, the attitude of the council members. Every meeting I've gone to in Linwood has been antagonistic to some degree, some to the point where they had to stop the meetings. I'm deeply, deeply happy to say that Mill Creek is a very congenial, very convivial, very open and very happy group of people, and it's in no small part to the attitude of council members. So give yourselves a pat on the back. I'm giving you a pat on the back. I think it's something to say that Mill Creek is such an open, and the council meetings are such a positive thing. And on speaking at council meetings, I want to say officially from a citizen of the city, Gina, we are really going to miss you. You are the heart and soul and the smile of this Mill Creek. So I'm very sorry to see you go. And I do sincerely wish you the happiest and the best of all possible futures. We hope to see you again. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Carmen.
Carmen Fisher, 14623, Apartment B101, Mill Creek. So I wanted to come up today and encourage you to work as quickly as possible to hire, if not just one, two new police officers. The first, obviously, to replace the SRO. The second, because we've been down a detective for a little while, I think, and from what I hear, the number of detective hours that are currently available are not adequate to investigate and stay on top of all major crimes, just I think something that's important. So a couple of you have talked about the conversations that you've had with people on the campaign trail. Police services is the thing that I've been talking to people about more than anything else. And I can tell you that the citizens of Mill Creek unequivocally support a fully staffed and well-equipped police department. Like, they know that the quality of life that everybody holds is like so very important in Mill Creek, requires a department that can go beyond responding to crimes into visibility and community engagement and crime prevention activities. Research shows that overtime has been a tried and failed tactic to dealing with police staffing issues. There's a helpful article about this. It's called The Alarming Consequences of Police Working Overtime. It's from the website governing.com. I have a copy if anybody wants the citation. And it really illustrates the extent to which overtime leads to more injuries, both for the officers and for other people, and it's more complaints and more ethics violations. For example, in King County, whenever they audited the sheriff's department down there, they showed an approximately 3% increase in use of force and ethics violations after officers had worked only 1 hour of overtime in the previous week, right? Much less the, you know, what we know is common from Chief Owen's presentation, a 4+8 or additional shifts additionally overtime. You know, we know that there's a big risk to police officers in terms of single vehicle traffic fatalities, and we know that fatigue can rival alcohol in terms of impairing drivers. Okay, and overtime, it's not just going to cut into officers' sleep. It also cuts into their other opportunities to recharge, to spend time with their families, many of whom have minor children. And so to rely on mandatory overtime instead of adequately staffing the department is to just make a decision that we're going to infringe upon their quality of life. And then if we're already running at those margins, whenever we are then actually getting into a bigger emergency, whether it's a weather event or somebody who's very sick, you know, we're really going to be in trouble. So we're blessed with incredible officers here, and the region is really having trouble keeping their offices staffed with great officers. And I know that all they want is the support that it takes to really give the community the service that they try to rise to and succeed at rising to. So let's help them out as much as possible. I'm also very sad that Gina is leaving. And I just want to congratulate everybody on reaching the end of another election. Thanks.
Thanks, Carmen.
Okay, anybody else? Going once, twice? Okay, with that, we'll move on to presentations. We have two proclamations today. One of them is for Small Business Saturday. It's a national event, and as many people know, and I believe this council totally supports our local businesses, and so I'm hoping that the city manager will find a way to, or our communications staff, to promote our businesses, not just in the town center, but throughout our city. And then on November 30th, I always go shopping, multiple bags. So hopefully some of the other council members and the public will do the same. So with that, the proclamation reads, whereas the City of Mill Creek, Washington celebrates our local small businesses and the contributions they make to our local economy and community, and whereas small businesses employ 47.5% of all businesses with employees in the United States, and whereas 90% of the consumers in the United States say Small Business Saturday has had a positive impact on their community, and whereas 89% of the consumers who are aware of Small Business Saturday said the day encourages them to shop small all year long, and whereas 73% of the consumers who reportedly shop small at independently owned retailers and restaurants on Small Business Saturday did so with friends or family, and whereas the most reported reason for consumers being aware of the day to shop and dine at small independently owned businesses was to support their community, and whereas Mill Creek, Washington supports our local businesses that create jobs, boost our local economy, and preserve our communities, now therefore I, Pam Pruitt, the mayor of Mill Creek, on behalf of the entire city council, do hereby proclaim November 30th, 2019 as Small Business Saturday and encourage the community to support small businesses and merchants on Small Business Saturday and throughout the year. And I certainly hope that we can be supportive as a city of our local businesses. So next up was Veterans Day, again, near and dear, and I thought it was time we had a proclamation, so I'll be brief. Whereas the contributions and sacrifices of the men and women who served in the armed forces have been vital in maintaining our freedoms and way of life, and whereas tens of millions of Americans have served in the armed forces of the United States during the past century, and whereas hundreds of thousands of Americans have given their lives while serving in the armed forces during the past century, and whereas Washington State is home to more than 544,000 veterans, 60,000 active duty military, and 18,000 National Guard and Reserves and their families, and whereas our veterans are brave and selfless individuals who, when duty called, willingly put themselves in harm's way to defend the lives and liberty of others, and whereas our veterans understand the important task before the American service men and women, now keeping watch, and whereas all Washingtonians must strive to ensure that ours remains a land worthy of the great love of our veterans, our great love our veterans have shown for it, now, therefore, I, Pam Pruitt, the mayor of City of Mill Creek, on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim November 11, 2019 as Veterans Day and encourage our community to acknowledge and honor the contributions of our veterans to the principles of democracy, individual freedom, and human rights. Thank you very much. And, of course, November 11th is our big day. So, moving along. Next up is 2020 property and EMS tax levies. And what we're discussing tonight is just a first pass and an introduction. This is, we're not making decisions or commitments. So.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that characterization of the discussion this evening as an introduction. We'll talk about this in the next segment about the schedule that we've outlined for getting our work done over the month of November. Tara?
Sure. Good evening. As Michael said, this is just an introduction to the topic. The really important deadline to keep in mind is November 27th. So this is the date of the ordinance adopted and county in order to get property taxes next year. So very critical deadline. Our proposed schedule is to have this first discussion tonight, have a public hearing next week, and then bring the ordinance back for adoption on the 26th. So a few things just to show you how this works. I know last year the city did not pass an increase in the regular property tax levy, so we get the certification numbers from Snohomish County. They show what the actual levy is from the prior year. That's the $6.289 million. When we're considering whether we want to do a 0%, a 1%, or something higher, it's all calculated based on that base dollar amount from last year. So that's the starting point. The highest lawful levy includes the banked capacity. So you can see that's quite a bit higher than what the actual levy is. We've put together a proposal of numbers either at 0% or 1% for property tax and EMS levies. The budget amendment that we'll discuss momentarily assumes that we would adopt a 1% increase to both. You have flexibility in that. It's just for discussion purposes at this point. So this one is showing the regular property tax levy. Sorry about that. The next page that's also in your packet is the EMS levy. So here I just want to note that you don't have any banked capacity in the EMS levy. That's because you've adopted the 1% every year going forward. So really what's up for consideration at adoption time is 0% or 1% for EMS, 0%, 1%, or something higher for property tax. I certainly don't see anything that indicates that you need to go higher than 1% on the property tax. However, you could if there was something pressing that you wanted to fund. So I'd be happy to take any questions you have on this.
Brian?
Thank you, Mayor. This is more for the record and for those who may be listening, because the property taxes is always entirely confounding. So can you just explain, so we're all on the same page, when I'm looking at the first ordinance, it reflects in the recitals that in 2019 we levied $6,289,668. And then falling down in the lower recital, it's proposing that with a 0% increase, this in 2020 we're proposing to collect $6,376,143. Just so we're all understand, can you explain how the difference between those two numbers is 0%?
Yes, absolutely. That's a confusing point always. So that includes administrative adjustments, refunds, and new construction. So those numbers are all provided from the county for us. And when we take the actual levy for 2019, we know that what that is. For 2020, the new construction is an estimate. And the administrative refunds are as well, but the county provides those numbers. So that's the discrepancy between last year's actual levy. Even if last year's actual levy shows a certain amount and we do a 0% increase, it will be higher than last year's actual levy due to new construction and administrative adjustments.
Without us having raised any property tax.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just wanted that to be clear, especially for anyone who listens to the tape, because when I read comments online, I get frustrated when I hear people talk about, the electors are just keep raising our property taxes. Well, no, not necessarily. Your taxes go up. In large part, we have a little bit of influence on it, but a lot of it is what the voters do themselves with what they approve to be added onto their property taxes. And so I just want to make sure, because when I look to those numbers, it's like, wait a second, that's not 0%. There's a change in the number.
Correct.
So thank you for that clarification.
How much does 1% raise?
$62,000 for the property tax and $17,000 for EMS, so a total of about $80,000.
Okay. Mike.
Following on to Councilmember Holzclaw's or Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw's comments, same thing. The piece of paper you showed from the county talks about estimated new construction. That's estimated for 2020. The number that's not there is the actual increase in our assessed value from 2019, and that's what makes up the difference between the 6376 and the 6289.
We actually have administrative refunds this year that total $88,000 for regular and $22,000 for the EMS levy. So that goes into that number as well, the administrative adjustments. And you may ask me what those are. I have no idea. That's something the county
states
and provides.
Okay. But so that also figures into that number.
Exactly.
That's why the difference
yes.
is there. But again, that administrative adjustments is things that's not, as Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw points out, that's not changing the rate.
Correct. And that's out of the city's control.
Yeah. And I think his comment is when people look at their whole tax bill, they go, gosh, my whole tax bill went up, and they want to blame anybody they can find that's in elected office. And I think what we've reflect here is that the city has a certain part of their tax bill, a significant part of it. It's important to us. But if we pick zero, that doesn't mean their tax bill is not going to change. But it's not something we did. And your comment about elected, this would be where people have said, I'm going to take a school bond issue. Is it something that goes to the voters as opposed to this is something we would do councilmatically? Thanks.
Anybody else?
I was going to ask the question. I'm assuming the IPD is more than 1%, so
correct.
We don't have that problem.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, the next item then on the agenda is with regard to the 2019-2020 proposed budget amendment. Just as a matter of setting up the schedule, and you'll see it on the PowerPoint momentarily, tonight is intended to be an introduction of this discussion. At next week's, we will continue the discussion. We want to talk about policy direction from our legislators, and we also want to talk about proposed work plans, particularly with respect to the positions I'm proposing. We are working on those, and we're going to do our level best, barring any more unforeseen events, to be more than prepared. I would like to try and get the agendas out to council early, and it would be available for any discussion or clarification. Next week, Tara's schedule will not allow her to participate in the council meeting, but will be available Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Then following, we've got the public hearing scheduled for November 26th. On proposed amendments, if the meeting on November 12th doesn't clarify to the council's satisfaction, we can schedule additional meetings as required. The absolute deadline, which I strongly do not ever recommend, is December 31st. But the proposal would be that we conclude our work, we receive our directions from the council, we receive our budget, and we're ready to adopt on December 3rd, and the administrative team can begin their work in preparation for next year.
Okay.
So there's a lot to cover tonight. Just to give you an idea of where we're headed, we need to cover general funds, special revenue funds, surface water management, equipment replacement, and capital. I anticipate general fund and capital to take the longest amount of time, so I will do a brief spiel on each section and leave it up to council as to how much time you want to spend on discussion. Certainly, as the city manager mentioned, we have multiple more meetings to come back and respond to any questions you have, so completely up to you how much detail you want to get into on these items. And again, this is just a starting point for discussion. So I will jump right into the general fund. There's a couple big revenue factors. So for property taxes, the biennial budget is currently about $15.8 million. If we proceed with a 1% increase in both property and EMS taxes for 2020, that would get us to a biennial total of $16.1 million, which gives us an additional $307,000 of revenue for the biennium. So roughly $80,000 of that is the 1% increase that we're talking about and proposing. The remainder is simply the fact that property taxes were budgeted very conservatively in the biennium. So the bulk of it is conservative budgeting. $80,000 is a proposed increase in taxes based on the 1%.
Tara, before you go on, sounds like fundamentally we were very cautious or very conservative in how we projected this, but was the assumption, if we read the verbiage in the budget book, which I couldn't find mine, so I'm going to ask you, did we assume a 1% in 2019 and a 1% in 2020 when we set that up, or do you know?
It would have had to be something significantly less, because even if you'd done zero and zero,
it's
still a very conservative number.
Yeah.
So okay. I can't speak to the history of how.
I don't know if anybody else remembers. We must have told City Manager Stowe and crew at the time, yeah, you can assume 1% for 2019, but not for 2020, or we said 0-0, or does anybody remember what we did?
We didn't do a tax increase last year.
So it would have been 0-0 then, probably.
0-0. With okay. The understanding that we would address it this year.
Have a chance to talk about it later. Okay, so probably that was part of the conservatism, but it was still really conservative.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Which is good. It's just presenting the information as to what it is now. Yep. On the sales tax side, the biennial budget was just under $5.5 million. When I run the numbers that we've actually collected to date and project those numbers to continue for 2020 with no increase, that will end us 2020 $600,000 higher than budget. I'm entirely comfortable with those. That's a very conservative estimate. And again, sales tax was budgeted conservatively. That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. This is simply presenting information that the numbers are coming in much higher than budgeted. That's not a significant increase over prior years' actuals. Your increases are actually very moderate in sales tax, so I don't feel like utilizing this fund, as we'll talk about, some of it's going to go to positions if approved by council. Other sources of it will go to one-time expenditures, but I'm entirely confident in saying that this is a conservative number and those revenues should continue barring some massive crisis. It's not related to a one-time thing or an abnormal increase at all. It's very consistent numbers. And then the final item to be considered is charges for services revenue. So that's going to exceed budget by just under $177,000. That's related to the ILA with Everett Public Schools for the second SRO. So those are the revenue factors and the revenues that we've identified that staff believes we could utilize in good ways, which we'll talk about next. So position changes that are being requested. The first one is the school resource officer. So this is adding the second SRO to the budget. This was what was discussed at council when the ILA was approved and changed. So it's simply adding that position that's already been discussed and giving us formal authorization to have it, getting it in the position listing, authorized position listing, and then adding the funds to the budget.
Through the chair. Mayor, what I would add to that on that topic is that what we want to do is protect this funding and have it available for the police department budget. Without spending the time this evening, I've captured a lot of the discussion with regard to this. We know there's additional diligence that needs to be performed on our end, particularly with regards to a new way that we capture the data for the police department. But I do want it out. I would respectfully ask the council that it be appropriated so that it's for the police department.
Other positions that are being proposed, but I'll let our city manager talk about further, are a chief of staff position, maintenance worker, and administrative assistant for 2020. And then the final change here for the general fund is removing the director of marketing and communications position and replacing it with an additional marketing and communications coordinator position. That has a net budget savings of $63,000, which would go towards funding these other positions. The remainder of the other positions would be funded by the sales and property tax. But again, I fully expect to maintain over the coming years. I don't see any problems from a financial standpoint of doing that should you choose to proceed. I'll let you address this.
Yes, so just taking the maintenance worker position first. Gina and I are...
No, go ahead, that's fine, after you're done.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, keep going. I've got a question before you leave the slide, but you go ahead, thanks.
Yeah. So we are working on developing that, but really what we've talked about is while we didn't, were not able to capture it in an iWorks program that the DPW currently uses to manage their and schedule their time, I believe that there's another way that we're going to capture it to make a case for what an additional FTE in the DPW could do, both in terms of actual work, but also in terms of redundant coverage when we have time off in the department. Furthermore, I've heard a lot about the winter last year, and what I would like us to be able to do, and we'll allude more to this in the capital spending, is consider a different way that we can be prepared for an outstanding or an irregular storm event. I'm hearing about 100 and 200-year storms are happening with increasing frequency. I don't believe, from what I've heard, I don't have the confidence that the county is necessarily going to be able to assist in the manner in which we all anticipated. So that additional DPW worker would, that FTE position would be able to assist. It's also my expectation that we're going to have a chance to review a lot of things as it relates to process and procedure for the city. In other places, there are emergency powers that city managers have to have others perform non-traditional work in the event of an emergency. Sometimes even city managers that can drive a plow truck if it doesn't require a professional driver license. So there are a number of things that we still need to put together to not be caught, as I heard we did last year. With regard to the chief of staff position, I do have a two-page draft of the work plan. But in a nutshell, without going into detail tonight, there are a number of items that just keep popping up that suggest there needs to be a different way for the city of Mill Creek to do business going forward, so that even if we don't have a redundancy in a position as it relates perhaps to a deputy city manager, we can have processes established here so that, for example, a Title VI report becomes an automatic diary item, that a number of other examples that I will provide at the next meeting simply is something that's captured institutionally so that whoever may be administering various parts of the administration will have an opportunity to refer to a playbook that would have us in compliance. There are issues, for example, in HR that are too lengthy to go into, but even our job descriptions don't comply with federal law as it requires the explanations. There are a number of other issues that suggest for me that it's time for us to administer the city of Mill Creek in a way that captures the best practices in municipal governance. It's going to require an additional team member that can be more hands-on with the day-to-day work, while I attend to what I thought would be an opportunity already to build relationships regionally and to work in looking at the overarching needs for the city of Mill Creek as we move forward to what one councilor has described as a particular stage of development for the city, and it's time for it to advance into a more adult phase. And that's going to require long-term financial planning, and I believe it's going to require long-term relationship building to develop a model going forward. While I've not had the chance to conduct outreach, I will tell you that I've attended two regional events since I've come here in May, and that's unacceptable to me. The first had to do with an opportunity to go on a ferry and meet a number of folks in the regional economic development, and the other was a HART meeting up at the Snohomish County building. And just looking around the room 2-3 months in, and only being able to shake hands and introduce myself to one or two people doesn't necessarily serve the best interests. If it's the policy of this legislative body that we continue to do the hands-on work here, while I don't recommend it, whatever your direction is, we'll make it work. But I want to have an opportunity to make a more compelling case for what I'm talking about next week. Hmm. Oh, and then finally, the administrative assistant. Since starting here and observing the work of the clerk's office, there's absolutely no way that I was comfortable in assigning what I would consider to be administrative tasks. There isn't the time and there isn't the capacity, and that's not for the lack of a work ethic with the clerk and what Gina Pfister is able to do on a day-to-day basis. What I would like to have is an opportunity to work in an area that I think would reflect the best practice. In many instances, The city manager is being paid to do clerical work, and while I don't mind doing it, it helps me get to know the system and to be more hands-on. You're closer to the work. You're able to make better recommendations. I don't think that this is necessarily the way the city would want to administer going forward. I will give greater detail, though, in next week's meeting.
Okay. Mike? So I just wanted to begin, for somebody listening in or looking at those slides, you go, maintenance worker, $100,000, I want that job. Well, that's $100,000 loaded with all the salaries and benefits and stuff like that. So that's our net effect to our budget, but that person doesn't get a paycheck for $100,000.
This is based on the mid to high end of the range, $60,000 plus 20%. So all the positions have 20% built in for MEBT and retirement contributions. Okay. So it's percentage base. And then I've added in medical benefits at the high end, assuming a full family medical, just to give you the worst case scenario for these.
So you've taken a worst case at the high end as opposed to having a cross organization. Here's the average.
Yes.
Medical kind of thing. There's two ways to do it, but okay.
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Steckler.
I imagine we're going to talk next week about questions on the positions.
Yes.
That's fine. Then I just wanted to kind of clarify a couple overview questions. The SRO, it says add second SRO to the budget. Does that mean we're adding an officer to the police force, or have you made that decision yet?
Yeah, that's what the request for the appropriation is that the intention would be to come back to council with the additional outstanding questions, perform our diligence, provide the data that we discussed is unavailable through the county records gathering mechanism, address any other outstanding questions council has, and to move forward with that. What I'm primarily concerned with now for the budget season is to protect that money so that it's not spent anywhere else and that it's held in the police department line.
I totally support that. On the removal of the Director of Marketing Communications position, there are a number of essential functions of that particular position that you mentioned here to be replaced with additional marketing communications coordinators, which are fantastic individuals that we have in both Gordon and Meredith, but a very different type of position than a director-level position.
Yeah.
So those essential functions, are those going to be performed? Was your plan to have them performed by the coordinator position or somebody else?
A lot of the director-level functions would be subsumed through myself and the chief of staff. What I did discuss with Gordon, and I just didn't have a chance to mark it up, is the strong possibility that at least one of the marketing and communications positions could be converted into a manager-level position in that department. But there are a number of unknowns at the moment, particularly relating to a person who's currently on leave and will be returning back. The crisis that was precipitated by the leave that was taken, and as well as other things that happened, has really, I think, developed a team there that's nimble. They're aware of what else they could be doing if they had time. But more importantly is that I need to have the time to actually work in a supportive role in marketing, communications, and recreation. I've not been able to dedicate the time that I would hope to.
So you'll be able at our next meeting to address specifically how and where those essential functions will be accomplished. Who will have the experience, knowledge, talent, ability to do them?
That's the plan, Councilman
Okay,
Steckler.
Great. I just wanted to confirm it. We'll get that before
you bet.
Take a step further on that. Good.
Stephanie?
I just want to ask, you said you have laid out what you want the chief of staff to be working on.
Yes.
Will you be sending us that before the next meeting so we have time to look over what you're proposing really well?
Yes, my intention is for the study session agenda summary to contain the explicit language. I've got two pages for the chief of staff. I would also work to develop the administrative assistant. And Gina Hortolosa and myself are going to work to develop the work plan overall for the department, as well as what the additional FTE would be able to perform in terms of not only additional maintenance-related functions, but also backfilling functions for the times during the year when there are vacancies due to illness, holiday, et cetera.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Okay. Moving on. Other expenditures in the general fund. So these are largely one-time. Some of them are a little bit ongoing. Legal services is the big ticket item. So we're proposing a $300,000 increase to the legal services. That's significant due to a variety of factors that have occurred and are anticipated to continue occurring.
I'll just, through the chair, with regard to that, to put it in other terms, the budget that was allocated for 2 years has been spent in 1 year. There's one item in particular that council was briefed in executive session about that is not insured and is not covered. And so what I'm budgeting for conservatively is the expenses that will be associated with that litigation. Should it resolve in one manner or another, I want to at least have those dollars allocated than not.
Okay. The second item is the interim city manager contract and the city manager search contract. So that ended up, when you net out the salary savings from not having a city manager, it ends up to be $100,000 that wasn't included in the budget, which completely makes sense. When you developed the 2019-20 biennial budget, you didn't know that you'd have an interim city manager and a search contract and how much that would cost. So this is largely administrative to clean that up and get the dollars in the budget. The equipment replacement funding line, $71,000, this maintains the current schedule. It's my understanding that this is a normal process that we go through mid-biennium, is to review the asset replacement schedule and add the new assets in and recalculate the depreciation. This $71,000 is a function of that exercise. It's not adding in anything new. It's not changing the status quo, but it's maintaining the set-aside in accordance with the existing schedule that's in place. I know there have been questions, and they're good questions, on looking at that schedule. How do we determine when something should be replaced? When is it truly at its end of its life? Can we buy used versus new? They're all great questions that should be considered. However, I would recommend, before you get to that point, continue setting the money aside as you have been. At least you'll have it there. Even if you want to look at how you do things and change the accounting later, you'll have the money set aside, and that's all this is doing. It's not authorizing anything being purchased at this point, just setting the money aside. The purchases come later when we get to the ERNR fund.
Through the chair. Put another way, we're really looking at a new model that doesn't necessarily have a depreciation schedule determining when a car is or is, or a piece of equipment is or is not any longer useful. We want there to be an opportunity for us to reconfigure how we do fleet maintenance, how we do fleet management. And if other cities are interested in buying our vehicles to use them, that suggests maybe we can get a few more years out of them, so that even if this budget line were to continue to be expanded, there might be other opportunities for capital purchases that can support the overarching goals of the council.
Mike?
Thanks. Yeah, this is a couple of years ago, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but somehow a few years ago, we did some movement of funds around, and then I think we fixed that back to the old system. And what City Manager Carafino just talked about is, I'm in favor of us relooking at that system and saying, does it make sense? You know, look at the mechanical life of a vehicle, not the calendar life of a vehicle, for instance. A 10-year-old lift truck that only gets used occasionally maybe is just fine, whereas a 10-year-old police car has probably been, had the heck used out of it, and the seats are all broken. But I'm trying to understand the $71,000. Did we just not project that appropriately in this biennium? Because I thought we had our funding problem fixed.
No, in the biennial budget, and we'll talk about this when we get to the ERNR fund, the only items that were included in the budget were items to be replaced in 2019, with the idea that we would come back in 2020 and say what items are up for replacement in 2020.
Oh.
So this is, and furthermore, the 2019 items weren't added into the schedule and calculate how much we need to set aside for future replacement of those items. So this is kind of a cleanup of multiple things. To get to your point about the accounting, we did go through a process I was new, senior accountant new, we didn't really know what was going on, so we fully, thoroughly reconciled the fund, and what we know is that all of the assets that are on the schedule reconciled to the cash balance in the fund, and we have set things aside in accordance with our schedule and our practice. The money's there. The second part now is to go forward and say, how do we want to do this differently, and how do we really want to fund and determine when things are up for replacement?
Okay.
So kind of a two-part process.
Yeah, so I heard you say is that we had an asterisk when we did our 2019-2020 budget, and I've forgotten that asterisk, but the asterisk was, oh, we'll worry about 2020 equipment replacement later. Shame on us for doing that, but...
Yes.
So we kicked the can down the road. Here it is. We found the can.
Exactly. Yes. And this $71,000 does not change the process or add new things in
at all.
It
just fixed the fact that we didn't put enough money
cleaning up the accounting on it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad you found that. I'm glad you're fixing it. That's good.
The next item is general safety and security upgrades capital outlay that wouldn't be funded by REIT or other restricted dollars. So things that would have to come from the general fund.
It's really a discussion that we want to have next week, but there's a lot being proposed, and there's a lot that's being discovered. One of the things that concerns me the most is a lack of a fire suppression system in a certain area of the police department that's above an area of a significant wooden structure. I'm fairly certain it doesn't pass fire code, and there may be other compliance issues that we need to look at. So what we are going to be doing is our diligence in ensuring that that issue, there's an issue with the bollards that surround the propane tank in the back of the building. While there's sufficient coverage on one end of the tank, there's a vulnerability with regard to the inappropriately wide spacing in one side of the tank and no bollard protection on the other. There's a discussion about putting up and erecting fencing between the two buildings so that the police officers aren't necessarily blindsided when they leave the building to go to their cars. There's a couple of other proposals that I still frankly need to vet as it relates to special glass for the police department building and a number of others that we have to do our homework between now and next Tuesday so that we can be more adequately prepared. But what it strongly suggests is that this is another area where certain things have been allowed to just collect moss, and I'm really deeply concerned about the fire suppression issue. There's a host of issues in the other building that is not appropriate for tonight's presentation. I want to pay attention to the time, but we will be prepared for that for tomorrow, next week, excuse me.
I apologize for the last item. Rereading it, I realize it's a little bit poorly written, but two pieces here to the police department operating budget. The first is domestic violence coordination services. So that piece of the budget amendment is $27,000, and that I believe council is familiar with the new contract that's in place and the higher cost. So the $27,000 is the higher cost for the biennium. The remaining $13,000 is firearms purchases, which are essentially carried forward from 2018 that could have been spent at the end of 2018 but weren't, and we need to carry them forward into the budget. They were purchased early 2019. So really an administrative cleanup item on that one.
So the DV services, I remember talking about it's going to be more expensive with our new approach, which we agreed is a great approach. Was the $27,000 the amount for an entire biennium, or is that the run rate going forward from when we had the ILA?
This is to address the issue for the biennium, for the whole biennium.
Okay, but I can't remember when we had the ILA. Was it at the beginning of 2019, and you can look at the chief,
spring.
I don't remember. Spring. So that's probably I'm looking at our run rate is probably not 27, it's probably 32 or something like that.
Right, for the next biennium,
yeah,
exactly.
Okay. But this is fixing up some shortage in 2019 because we had not budgeted enough.
Exactly.
And then looking forward to.
Yes. Okay, keep moving on. Special revenue funds, these are all, I would consider, fairly minor, straightforward adjustments. The first one is the drug buy fund. So, quite honestly, it just looks like the fund got missed in the biennial budget. There was nothing budgeted for it. We do use that fund for the city's contribution to the regional drug task force, though. So we know we need to have budget in there. So this is simply giving the fund a budget of $26,000, which we've already collected in revenues, simply giving us a the legal authority to go spend and make these payments. The second item is in the street fund. That's to increase the budget by $300,000 to reflect a new TIB grant, which I'm sure you're aware of. Even though you've accepted the grant, we can't go spend it until we have budget authority to do so. So that's cleaning that up. And the last item is the partner to the $71,000 in the general fund. It's the project of reviewing and updating the equipment replacement schedule and the what we call depreciation that should be charged. So a fairly minor amount, but I wanted to get it in there. Moving on to the surface water fund. So this amendment is really related to the rate study that was adopted earlier this year. Obviously, when the budget was originally adopted, you didn't know what the rate study would be. It wasn't complete, so that's why there's such significant changes needed at this point. So the total increase of the budget being proposed is $790,000, which includes the largest item is the surface water engineer position. So that was included in the rate study, the adopted rate study to start in 2020. That position was not in the 2020 budget. Or the, sorry, the 2019-2020 biennial budget. So we need to get that added at this point.
The engineer, the surface water engineer button, sorry.
That position was not included? I thought we did.
It was not. I went through and reconciled everything, and it was absolutely not included. It's not on the authorized position listing, nor are the dollars included in the salaries and benefits line for surface water.
Oh, the only reason I kind of recall it being included is because we discussed the fact that there's grant money available to help pay that salary going forward. Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious to take a closer look at that. I could almost bet my bottom dollar that we approved that position for Gina.
I believe it was. Everyone, when I got here, was under the impression that it had been approved. But then when staff went in to find where the dollars were, they weren't there. So I think something happened.
Okay.
I can't speak to what, but the impression I got was it was definitely council's intent to have the position in the budget, but the dollars absolutely are not in the budget. So we have to get it cleaned up now.
Okay. Thanks, Tara.
Either way.
Has this person already been hired?
No.
But we're going to be hiring yet another engineer?
If approved, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some confusion here. We had a big discussion when we were talking about the surface water fund, and we said it was important to put it in the money. So we've got the money coming in our rates to pay for this. But what Tara's saying is when we did the budget, which was before we did the surface water rate study, we had not yet said how would we didn't have a way to pay for it. So we said this is coming, but we said let's wait till we figure out what our surface water fees should be to pay for these projects and that person. Isn't that?
Without having been here, that sounds to me like what would have happened given the timeline before the rate study was adopted.
I think Gina may know. Is that kind of close? Because I think we just didn't know what it was going to be. And if we didn't have the rates to support it, we didn't want to authorize you to hire somebody until we had the money.
Councilmember Todd is correct. When we set the surface water rate last year, we included one FTE, a surface water engineer, and then the next 0.3 FTE, the GIS position. So that's we are already collecting the funds for that. This is not additional funds. It's already being collected.
Yeah. But this is the authority to go spend that. You needed the authority. You can't, just because the money's getting collected, you have no authority to go hire anybody until we do this.
That's correct.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the second item is the 0.3 GIS that Gina mentioned, so $30,000, which would be used for professional services. Again, that was in the rate study, but we don't have the authority to go forth and spend until a budget amendment is passed. The legal line for $10,000, that's the bond council fee related to the debt that was issued. And then the next line is the debt service principal and interest. This is the exact amount that will be due for the biennium for the bond that was issued.
And that's just this year?
For the biennium. Okay. For both, yep. And then the last item is capital outlay for the small pipe assessment project, $300,000. That is a project that was on the capital plan associated with the rate study, but it wasn't put in the budget. Again, following the same timeline, it makes sense that none of the projects were included in the budget without knowing what the rates would be.
So are none of these in the budget? I'm confused.
Correct.
None of these are additional fees.
None of them are additional fees,
right.
Correct.
We just did not
put the expenditures
in. We approved all these expenditures and nobody put them in the budget.
Correct.
So we've known about them, they just weren't there where they're supposed to be.
Yes.
So it's more like a paper.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. Which makes sense since you didn't adopt the rate study till after the budget was adopted.
Okay.
It makes sense, the timing. All right. Equipment replacement fund. So this is the actual authority to purchase new vehicles. So we set the money aside. That's the $71,000 we talked about. We set it aside, and then when we actually want to go buy new things, it comes out of the equipment replacement fund. As we discussed, we only included 2019 items in the original budget. So this is the items that are being proposed for 2020. Two police cars. These are cars that are fully depreciated according to our schedule, so we have the cash set aside for these vehicles. I'll allow the chief to speak on the condition of the vehicles and why they need to be replaced, if there's questions on that. The police motorcycle is $30,000. That's an item I believe council is familiar with and approved that purchase earlier this year with a notation that we would need to do a budget amendment for it because it wasn't in the original biennial budget. The last item is two new dump trucks with plowing and de-icing capabilities, which I'll turn it over to one of you to support those a little bit more. But just from the finance perspective, I want to be clear that we do have the money set aside and available for those. They were originally purchased in 2001, I believe, so they're long past when we could have replaced them under our existing schedule.
Through the chair, these are multi-purpose vehicles that could be used throughout the year, and they're also four-wheel drive. And Gina's proposed, and I absolutely support, that we would have the equipment that can be lifted up and out of the beds so that we can continue to use these vehicles for other purposes. But again, it would be purchased from a state list. It would not be available for us until, at the earliest, midway through the snow season, as I understand it, in Washington in 2020. But then we would have these vehicles in our fleet so that we don't necessarily have to activate the expensive emergency plowing contracts. That's still going to be our financial vulnerability for this year's snow season. But going forward, we have a plan that would at least have us less vulnerable and less dependent on others to get our own job done.
If I may, yes to everything that City Manager Caravino said, and in addition to that, the 2001 Isuzus that we have are not four-wheel drive, and that's what we used in February.
Go ahead, Jack.
I had a question also. So the dump trucks, we're going to have to do some outside services this coming year.
If we have the storms, yes.
Right. Yeah, it's common. Would it make more sense to wait until we can either not have to incur both the cost of the equipment and temporary services, and maybe just use temporary services next year, then the following year buy them early enough so we don't have to incur any temporary service? Sounds like we're just spending more money than.
It's a good question. If the fleet we currently had is not in need of replacement, I would say absolutely we could afford to wait a little bit. But Gina advises that we're pretty much on the back end of those two trucks that are currently in the fleet. What are they, 2001?
Correct.
And so the idea is that we still have use for it this year when they're delivered, but they would be available to us for the next year's snow season and would have us less dependent upon a contractor, I think in Mukilteo, that Gina has on standby and has had an active conversation about. We need you on standby for this year. So in a rational world, in my opinion, Councilman Steckler, we would have already ordered these trucks.
Right.
After having experienced what I hear you did at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, so again, you're saying the same thing I just said, which is, we're not going to get them in time for the full year, so we're going to use the Mukilteo service. We're going to have to, unless we have no snow this year. Yeah, but we're probably going to have to. So it sounds to me like it would make more sense to just plan on the Mukilteo services like we did last year and then buy these trucks next year prior to the 2021 snow season, so we're not paying for both a outside service and having our own vehicles. It just seems a shame to incur the expense in 2020 when we're still going to have to incur the expense of contract services. So that was my question. If we can't get them in time, would it not make more sense to wait?
It would if we were paying for this emergency readiness contract. And what I understand is there's no document that we're required to sign or that we're obligating the city to in order to have this resource available to us. I'm told they performed well last year, and Gina has already reached out to the provider, and they have committed. I did ask the similar question and said, wouldn't it help us to have just something in writing that says we have priority? And Director Hortolosa advises that that's not necessary, that this provider has a fleet. I also know that Gina has worked hard to follow a procurement protocol that would at least have other providers available, and I'm told that it's slim pickings out there, but that this person on a handshake. It doesn't feel like a best practice to me, but I'm also told that Director Hortolosa is confident. So my shorter answer is we're not paying anything for this service that we're going to activate if necessary, and it's the case that we need to place these orders now in order to have them available for us. We can wait a couple of months, but we would like to at least get the appropriation or the approval from council now to use those trucks because we need them for other purposes other than the snow season.
Other than the snow season?
Yeah.
Then I'd like to see that. You know, what other... Why do we need them for other services?
So I'll be prepared next week with more information on that. But, yes, that's what we needed to add, that they're not just for winter operations. They're year-round operations.
So that would answer my question next week.
Okay, Councilmember Cavallari, then Vignale.
Thanks, Mayor. Well, I do remember discussing that these vehicles needing to come online, that our fleet was aging. So I fully support the replacement of the existing vehicles. I also believe that we gave direction to the interim city manager and, you know, through him to Gina, that we needed a plan B and a plan C. So we're not caught flat-footed, kind of like we were last year, where we're, you know, scrambling for salt and sand and whatnot, that we asked, to use your terms, to have a procurement plan. So I applaud everything you did here, Gina. I 100% support that. I think that is out-of-the-box thinking, and I love the plan B and plan C if necessary. I like having options, and I know it costs money, but it costs a lot more in other ways during a storm or a crisis. Yeah. So thank you.
Councilmember Vignale, then Bond.
Can I clarify real quick for myself? Because if we were to follow that recommendation and not get the trucks and put them in the budget now for next year, then we would not be able to get them in the budget until the following year. So we'd still have to buy them in the middle of the season. So they would still not get here during the middle of that winter. So then, therefore, we would just have another winter where we don't have the whole trucks, right?
That's exactly correct, and I wanted to comment on that. Even if you waited until November next year to buy them, it's still the 2020 budget. And if you didn't do that, you're right, it would go to January of 2021 would be the earliest.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just want to clarify that I was thinking properly on that. Thank you.
Councilmember Bond.
Thank you. Everybody said it. So I support the trucks, all three of these purchases, actually, but the trucks in particular, we don't know what the event will be. We may need some assistance. We may get lucky. We may not, or something in the middle. If we delay the purchase of the trucks, that will be used for other things, the only thing we gain is not having X amount of months of depreciation. So I support all three.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right, bear with me. So the capital's going to get a little confusing, but we'll go through project by project and do our best. So I thought the easiest way to start discussing this is to take the capital project summaries that were included in the budget book last year and talk through the changes that we're proposing to each of the affected projects and then kind of where we get to at the end. So the first item is the Mill Creek Boulevard Corridor Improvement Study. That is something that we had planned to use $250,000 of REIT fund for. However, a grant was received for $300,000. So we're proposing to go in, increase the project budget from $250,000 to $300,000 and use grant funds for the project rather than REIT funds. So that's a good thing all the way around. And keep in your mind, that frees up $250,000 of REIT funds. We'll talk about what to do with that in a minute. The second project is 132nd Street. This project was canceled. So $750,000 was originally budgeted for that project. That was partially grant money and partially REIT funds.
Question on that one.
Yes.
The $750,000 was the grant that the employees got. And wasn't there not an $87,000 assessment fund that we put in there? Or would that be in a different, outside a different budget?
That was our cost.
Our share was supposed to be $80,000.
Yeah, the match.
No, no, the $87,000 for the originally in the budget, we had approved a project to go in and assess what it would cost to put in the right construction, the right crosswalk. And I believe that amount was $80,000+, as I recall. And that would that be reflected here or somewhere else? There was a project approved, and the one that you
got voted down.
No, no, that was the motion that you made to go back to the original budget, which we had stated. Let's just go back to the 80,000+ that we had budgeted to assess what it would take to solve the crosswalk problem or the...
So the conversation at the time was we were concerned about, was 750 the right number? And so we went around in circles, and so to get to the end of that, the proposal was just to get it voted on to say, look, are we willing to spend some money to figure out if 750 is the right number, if it's really a million? And we were talking about that.
Right.
And at the end of the day, we said, let's not spend that money. Let's just cancel the project. So we didn't...
Right, not spend that money.
We didn't spend the 80-something thousand that was potentially what Gina said is going to cost us that much to go to the X percent design. I can't remember, 20% design or something,
right,
to get to a good...
So there was a budget for a design or for an analysis?
Nope.
So the project, the original project had, of course, design and construction dollars. $0 were spent exactly because we didn't do anything.
Right.
We talked about in this forum doing an analysis as to different options, but that did not proceed.
I recall the motion. I know we're talking about the same thing there. Okay, so there was not in our original budget a... I thought there was a fee that we had set aside and approved to go in before we knew what we were going to do about the situation. What was the solution? We didn't know what it was. We were going to hire an outside firm or a consultant or somebody to come in and analyze it for us and provide us a recommendation. And I believe that was the 80-some thousand.
We didn't do that.
But we ended up not doing it.
But we originally had planned on it, correct?
So remember, the grant fund was like, the grant was like 675, and our piece of it was the 80-something that totaled up to 750. I can't remember exactly how the numbers worked, but something like that. So the grant is gone, and the money that we had taken out of REIT as our share of that project is now available. Tara's got that in her back pocket to spend later.
That's the money I'm talking about, the money that's in her back pocket.
$75,000. So the project budget was $750,000. The grant was $675,000.
And we had approved
the $75,000 to come from REIT.
Okay, so when this project's canceled, do we not show a savings of $75,000?
You do, correct.
I'm sorry, I said 87, but I thought it was...
75,
so 75, yes. Should that be reflected here or not?
It's as a savings. It's reflected, it's kind of hard to show all these pieces, I apologize for that, but if you look at your agenda item, page 17 in your packet, it's totaling everything, which is a little bit confusing, but if you look at the expenditure side, which is the second section in the road fund, you'll notice road improvement fund, a decrease in the expenditure budget of $850,000. That's a couple different things happening. It's the $750,000 from this project. It's $150,000 from the 35th Ave Southeast Pavement Preservation Project. So that's a project that was determined to no longer be needed. That adds up to $850,000. We then have to add back in the expenditure increase for the first project that we talked about, the Mill Creek Boulevard Corridor, because that's grant funded. We got the grant for that, so we need to increase the budget from $250,000 to $300,000. That's how we get to the total decrease of $850,000 in the expenditure budget.
All right, I see how you got it.
Sarah, you also have it on the agenda summary. It's the second bullet.
Oh,
under capital project funds, it's right there.
Perfect, thank you. Okay. I promise I added those up multiple times. It is just hard to see how it all fits together.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so the next adjustment, 35th Ave Southeast. Let me just get to my notes here. This is another one where we had planned to use REIT funds, $350,000, but a grant was received for that whole amount. So that's great news. It frees up those REIT dollars. Same thing on the next project, Heron Park. We had planned to use REIT money for that, and we got $155,000 of grants. So that collectively for those two projects frees up an additional $505,000 in REIT.
Are those like dedicated, like park REIT, or is it just REIT REIT or
general REIT? Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the next item I'll leave this up for a minute. Jumping back to your agenda item in the narrative on page 15 is kind of how I have these broken down. But we end up with all the savings from REIT. That totals, I just need to get here. That totals $980,000, the amount that was freed up from these other projects that we just talked about, the canceled projects and the ones that are now funded by grants. Then we had a one-time good thing that happened. Three apartments were sold in July, closed in July. We got the REIT for them, and that totaled over $700,000. And that was just a one-time payment that we got. It wasn't budgeted, wasn't planned. It's in excess of, again, REIT was very conservatively budgeted. So I'm entirely comfortable that that's one-time money that we can count on, and it won't decrease our REIT revenue that we'll receive for the rest of the biennium. So we're proposing to combine those amounts together and utilize them to fund a public works shop acquisition and development. So that's the final page on the slide that shows the new project here. It's increasing that budget significantly. I believe we only had $50,000 in the original budget, and it's increasing it to $2 million development. And that's the end. I'm happy to clarify. I know that was a little bit confusing.
You did great.
Kristen.
Yeah, my
Kristen, comment. So that last one you touched on is a topic that is a separate topic for another night, but we need to, so many years ago, it seems like it's way back before a lot of people's time, we had made a decision to buy the Silver Lake Water District property for the benefit of just using the shop in the back. During a previous iteration, I think that project kind of grew legs and got too big, and so then an alternative approach was, let's go look, see what we could do. The Cook property, that turned out to be infeasible, I think, is what this is reflecting. And so now we're going to go back, and I'm not unhappy that we're going back to the Silver Lake Water District property. I think it's a good option for us. But I think we need to hear, I'd like to hear at least, the travel log of how that happened and where we are. And when I get done, that number is a bigger number than I would have guessed it was, because maybe the purchase price has gone up through a new appraisal and we're stuck with that. But I seem to remember it was a $1.4, $1.2 million kind of purchase. And the issue was how much improvements were going to be done. And I'm of the camp that the shop is what we were looking for. We were looking for a yard and a shop. And the office building in the front with its asbestos flooring and that stuff, I propose we board it up and wait until we find a renter for it, or sell it off, or sublease it. But to make it occupiable as office space is not something I see as a need. But that's my bias without hearing from staff. So anyway, bottom line, I'd like to hear from staff what that project is before we move too much further forward. I don't disagree that it's great that we found enough REIT through various other things to potentially put something against this, but this project for me is a long ways from being something I'm ready to move forward on. Thanks.
Okay. Next.
That's it.
Okay, Michael.
That is it. We want to thank you for your time and attention and your understanding that the additional information is going to be prepared and ready for next council meeting.
And can I ask the council, because we have so much background knowledge and what have you, that you all make an effort, if you can, to talk with Michael and review these things one-on-one because that we should know, and it's a lot easier. I mean, especially when we've got so much history. I know not everybody does, but... it would be helpful if you could give him your questions ahead of time so he can be prepared next week. So, Mike, did you have something?
Yeah, I agree that we should do that, but I think a certain amount of this needs transparent to be talked about in public. So some of this does need to be talked about, but we can work a lot of the details offline. The other thing I wish I could lay my hands on, but we went through a process in the last year or two of updating our financial policies. And one of the caveats we put in there is we ought to take one-time revenue for one-time kinds of projects, so we weren't addicted to that one-time money. And I think that what you talked about here is a one-time $700,000 from selling some apartments, from some apartments being sold, is going to go towards a one-time kind of project. That's great. But what I think I'd like us to at least think about that before we move forward on these things, just kind of double-check to make it there. And the one I can't quote very well is, but I remember that at a certain level of surplus, we have made a policy that said if we got a certain amount of a surplus, some percentage of that should be rolled back into some sort of reserve fund. And I can't remember the exact wording, but I would ask that we look back at those financial policies and making sure that after the discussion we had previously, creating the policy that we are following our own policy, or if we're going to violate it, let's violate it with malice and forethought. But I would hate to have us. I think we had a good discussion at the time about how we made sure we didn't get addicted to the one-time kind of money or the surpluses, and how do we put those into rainy day funds and things like that. And that's all before Bob Stoves.
I think he called it an opportunity fund.
Opportunity fund.
We kind of weren't big fans of it, though.
Yeah, the name maybe was not indicative of, I think, what he was talking about. Fundamentally, I like the idea. I think the name could be misconstrued. But I think we should look back at what was the opportunity fund and make sure we're doing that. The good news is sales tax is up. Good news is property taxes, we were conservative in our forecasting of those, and so we've got money that looks like it's extra money, but I think we got to be careful long term that we don't set ourselves up for a burn rate that we can't support when the next recession comes. Knock on wood, hope it's never, but it will come sometimes. So we've got to be careful. Thanks.
Okay. Michael, next up is the Transportation Improvement Plan.
Thank you, Mayor. And Director Hortolosa is going to be presenting.
So, good evening, Council. Tonight's presentation on the TIP should be fairly straightforward after the study session and the public hearing in previous sessions. I want to highlight four items that are in the agenda summary that were discussed at our last meeting on October 22nd, and they have been removed from the TIP, but they are on our radar. And so the first one is the Mill Creek Elementary School sidewalk marking that was discussed. As a matter of fact, it was installed this afternoon by our crew. Yay. So that's fresh news. The second item is the 146th Street Southeast Webster's Pond speed radar installation. So we're working on, we have a radar out there already in one direction. So we're going to install a second radar in the opposite direction. Third item was brought up at the last session regarding Sweetwater Ranch neighborhood, which is 144th Street and Bothell Everett Highway. The concern is for residents from the Sweetwater Ranch exiting the neighborhood, making a left southbound onto SR 527. So we will explore options. Any kind of physical improvements will need to be coordinated with WashDOT. And the last project that was on the draft tip was the North Creek Drive pedestrian shoulder improvements. These are temporary improvements in nature, so we talked about putting delineators, striping, or even concrete curb on the west side. It's a project that's less than the capital threshold that we have of $25,000, so it's something that we'll look in doing in some other ways and not through the TIP or a capital project. Other than that, the major changes since our October 22nd meeting are highlighted in your attachment A. So in the overview, we added verbiage. And so the new verbiage reads, the TIP is not a financial commitment. Rather, it's a planning document to better understand what transportation projects are needed. It also identifies potential funding sources. The inclusion of a project in the TIP does not necessarily guarantee it will be delivered or constructed, but rather it helps the city plan for current and future transportation needs. Including projects and programs in the TIP also allows the city to compete for additional funding, such as state and federal grants. So that's a revision that was added since our October 22nd meeting. The next significant revision is on page 5, and it's the addition of a bicycle lane improvement program. So this program will assess safety and connectivity of currently marked bicycle lanes with the city and will develop policies and standards for markings and signage at bicycle lane locations. This program will also identify new locations where bike lanes may be necessary. Additionally, the program will create objectives to encourage bicycles as a mode of transportation. The city will engage key stakeholders such as the Cascade Bicycle Club and others. So that's the new program. We allocated $25,000 to that so that we meet our TIP threshold. And those are changes since the last version.
Didn't you also add about $2 million for the community transit on that wasn't there before?
It was not there before. This revision does not have that lane added.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought that there was $2 million in there for that. Number 11. I was going to say thank you. So 11 was already there. So we have nothing in there then for the TIP for community transit or the 164.
So number 11 was there before. So number 11 is the SR 527 164th Street intersection improvements. The addition of what CT has referred to as a bat lane is not included in this TIP.
So we don't, even though they're saying the orange line 23, 24, and that's within our thing, why aren't we including something? Or because after Mike explained about this is how you go get grants at the PSRC,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking in terms of getting grants. So we're just going to bypass it for this year?
Councilmember Todd?
So I'm on the strategic planning subcommittee at community transit, so I know more than I should on this one. So their plan, as submitted for capital improvement grants from the federal governments, is $85 million. That is set by what they're going to have to do, 50-50 match. And so they've sized what they could do. When they initially did the plan, they said, what were all the things we could throw in here? So they took out some station pairs they couldn't afford. There was some talk about adding a lane from on 164th from 527 to Mill Creek Boulevard. Their analysis of that didn't show an improvement in the transit times. It showed potential improvement for general purpose traffic, but that didn't make it eligible for a federal grant that's coming for transit money. So if we as a city said, geez, we sure wish you did that because as an artifact of adding that lane, it would improve general purpose traffic, they would say, more power to you, but we're not going to put that in our federal grant and mess up our chances of being able to afford the project. That's kind of the way it goes. I'm not sure we on our own would say, let's go spend a couple million. But I heard the number was $3.2 million. I'm not sure. That was their numbers. Maybe we have different numbers. But to add a lane from SR 527 to Mill Creek Boulevard, one more lane there, doesn't necessarily, like I said, it doesn't help them. I'm not sure that's a $3.2 million project we want to do. So this tip doesn't reflect that at this point, is my understanding. Is that sound about right?
That's correct. And it's in addition to everything you mentioned, Councilmember Todd, it's my understanding that CT still has that project in their environmental document, that lane,
yes,
in case funding, FTA funding, becomes available to them.
Exactly right. Yeah, their NEPA statement, the National Environmental Protection Act thing, includes a whole bunch of stuff that was in the $96 million when they added up all the wish list, but they took pieces out, including a station pair that Councilmember Wright from the county was wishing was there that just doesn't, the traffic doesn't support yet.
When the county widens the road down to the bridge, and we say, so sad, too bad, we're not doing the rest.
Well, so if the county, so the county did an east-west corridor study that came out to some bajillion, $200 million. And so if you look at the county's tip, I suspect that may be in there as one of those unfunded wish list things just like this is. I don't think the county has it within, there's no way they're going to find $200 million in the next few years. So, but I think your point is we ought to coordinate with the county long-term. If they ever think they're going to go for that, then we ought to put that piece on our tip. So that bat lane goes the whole way.
Okay.
I just don't think it's time. I don't think it's necessary to have it in there because I don't think we would want to build that on our own given the other things we need, but that's my personal opinion.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Good job on adding the bike thing. When we're looking at all these systematic things, we keep having the bike thing come up, and this is really good to say, look, let's just set some policies, not bike lanes everywhere. Where do they make sense? What's it going to cost us to develop a plan? This is a very good addition.
Okay. We need to protect Brian.
Well,
yeah, we need him here.
I agree, but just so that we don't raise an issue that we've beat several times before, do we need to specify? I mean, really what this was intended to is we have existing bicycle lane paths that have gaps. And so my intent with raising this was looking at completing those gaps, like down Mill Creek Road going down to 527. I don't want this to be construed that we're going to be looking again at bike lanes on Village Green Drive, because that's not the intent. Mm-hmm. It's filling in gaps with the existing bike lane system that we have today.
Correct. That's my understanding as well.
The text say that for you?
I think if we're all on the same page, I'm fine.
Yeah, what I read this to be is that staff is going to focus on a plan. You're going to have an inventory. You're going to say, here's what we're thinking about. We're going to go, nope, we don't like that, or yep, perfect. And we're going to talk about, for me, we're going to talk about protected bike lanes where they make a difference versus the unprotected bike lanes that maybe aren't as useful and things like that. So I think we'll have an opportunity to talk about that once you've got the inventory and here's a draft plan.
Stephanie?
Personally, I think we should clarify, because I think we prove that we forget things, and we may forget what our intention was if it's not clarified that we were intending to do what Brian is saying. A year from now, we're discussing it or it comes up again, and we're going to be sitting here going, what did we say last year?
I think looking at the language again, I think it is covered in the first sentence. This program will assess safety and connectivity of currently marked bicycle lanes. So I think we're covered with that language.
Okay, as long as you're comfortable. Okay, anybody else?
I'd like to make a motion to adopt Resolution 2019-584, thus adopting the 2020 to 2025 Transportation Improvement Plan after receiving public testimony during the public hearing on the regular October 22nd, 2019 council meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Okay, next up is reports. I'm getting a number of requests from robotics teams that want to come and do presentations. Somebody wants to build a robotics garden at the sports field. You were contacted by, could you tell what you were?
I think we all were.
I was contacted Well, actually, they came in and spoke with us, the robotics team that from Cedarwood that was looking at things to do with the library. And they have, we sat down and met with them, Gina and Michael and I, last week, and got a little bit more information about what they need. And what they were asking of us is they have to give a presentation in December for a competition. And so they have to come up with recommendations, and they're focusing right now, looks like, on the parking at the library. They need to be able to come in and give a presentation. They're asking for counsel where just to give ideas from us on where they're way off the mark and something could never, we would never implement or practice that. So they need that information to go and take back for them. I felt that we were not, under budget season, that we are not the level of interest from everyone would not be here so high during a council meeting, and I spoke with the mayor. So what we have come up with is that maybe we could have a meeting with them before the council meeting, either next week or even I think we could probably do the following. It just needs to be in November, and whoever wants to come and listen to their presentations and give them feedback would be appreciated, as opposed to doing it in a council meeting. And taking everybody's time.
Like at 5:30?
Yeah, so we were just thinking 5:30, and their presentations are 3 minutes apiece. There were two of them, and then they need feedback. So like 20 minutes of time. So if anyone is interested, I am willing to come and listen to them. I think it's a valuable relationship that I think we should be nurturing with our schools. And so if anyone else wants to come and participate, then we want to let you know that that would be appreciated.
Well, I think you're going to need to have people confirmed, because if you're going to have four of us there, you're going to have to issue a notice.
Yes. So we need to coordinate which day and who is interested in coming before him.
We can issue a notice of a potential quorum. Mm-hmm. We do that at my day job, and we've done it here. So it just means that if there is a quorum, we noticed it. But we need somebody. I guess you all are getting requests for people wanting to come do robotics presentations. So,
I got a different request that Councilmember Todd is working on me with, from a teacher I know at Mill Creek Elementary, to go to them, not to come to us to give a presentation, but to help them out.
I have somebody that wants to build a garden at the sports.
The first Lego League challenge this year, every year they give the kids a challenge, and the challenge, I think this year is called City Shaper or something like that. And so it must say, go talk to your city about what you can do to help your community. So all the kids are, we got to go talk to city council. I think normally we'd handle these things, if somebody comes and says, tell us about Mill Creek government, we would go to their classroom, for instance. I think same thing, if people want to volunteer and go meet with their club on their turf after school, that's a better way to handle these things than to make it a city function, because we've heard of three of these. There's probably more. There's not the only three. This is the three that are out of the gate. So I'm not opposed to do it, but I think we just got to be careful that we don't make it a bigger deal than it should be in our busy calendar.
I
think this is great.
Yes, John?
I'd be more than happy to support coming early, no problem. But one suggestion I might make, if they're looking at developing some type of park or development or something, that's something that the Arts and Beautification Committee is charged with. So it might make sense for them to go to that committee, contact them, make a presentation to that committee, because they're trying to come up with ideas. They're trying to come up with things that they can develop, artwork or pieces or something that would work in the community. They might be able to give them some direction or maybe partner up with them. But I'd be happy to come down early. Count me in. But I would also recommend to them that's probably a committee that would be a good idea to talk with.
I thought the park board, because it's
same here. Could be the park board, but that would be just in, maybe both, because that would be just parks, but the A and B works across the city. I know the A and B is working on something for Exploration Park right now, which might be a great opportunity, because they're the ones that actually come up with the artworks for the city.
So I'm going to forward all those to you.
Okay, Mayor.
See what you do with robotics.
All righty.
Good.
So, okay, I know everybody wants to get out of here, so that's enough from me. Mark?
No report.
John?
Okay. I'm ready to hang out all night, no problem. I actually do have one report that I want to make, a really good one. On October 26th, The city of Mill Creek sponsored a document destruction day along with Mill Creek's People's Bank, co-sponsored along with the city. And the Mill Creek Kiwanis and the Mill Creek Key Club provided all the manpower for it. We shredded 1,000 cubic feet of documents. We stuffed the shredded truck to bulging, but we kept it going because we had people coming the entire time. The attendance from the city was probably more than double what we had last year. Traffic started around 10 a.m. and kept going until after 2 p.m. constantly. It was a really great, great day. Citizens were very grateful. I would strongly suggest we make this an annual event because it was its second year. And a lot of the people who showed up, why we had such increased traffic, was good promotion, thanks to our communication and marketing team, but also the fact that people come to count on this annual event. So it was a really great event, a lot of great pride. Special shout out to our chief of police who was there the entire time, shredding and hauling and dumping documents into containers because he's the strongest one of us and was able to keep it going all night long. So good job, Chief. But it was a great, great day, and it was a great event for the city. So thanks to everybody who supported that.
Mark, did you have something?
I did, sorry. Gina, thank you for all your service. Appreciate you. You're going to be missed. You're going to leave a big hole. But thank you for everything you did. And also just thank you for the friendship that you showed me on my time up here and keeping me out of trouble and reminding me to check my emails. And you were very, very good to me. You're an excellent servant, and you'll be missed.
I had one more thing. Gina, from my standpoint, as a new councilman, you brought me on board. You were there when I needed information. You helped me shorten that learning curve as much as humanly possible. So on behalf of my fellow council members who get a little bit frustrated, thank you very much for all your help in getting me onboarded and part of this group. Thank you, and we will miss you so much.
Vincent?
I will hold off on the report, but I will thank Gina for her diligent public service and her one-on-ones with me, the little things, the water, and all of my some would deem as annoyances, but you've been a soldier and a sport about it and always smiling, and I really appreciate that. And you're going to be missed, and onward and upward, we wish you nothing but success. Thank you.
Stephanie?
I also want to tell Gina, I already came down and talked to her, but that she will be missed, and thank you so much. You were into everything, always making sure that we had everything we need, so you will be missed. Other than that, I just want to say that I will be going to the HART meeting this week because Brian will be away, so as the alternate, I'll be there, and so I will report back next week on what happens based on that. And that's it. Brian?
Like everyone else, thank you, Gina, and thank you for taking care of Council Member Cavallari's idiosyncrasies. One comment, going back to an item on the agenda that I thought of afterwards, we finished on the budget amendments. Did we look at those with the eye towards the financial policies we adopted back in May? So we adopted a set of financial policies on May 17th with the
That's what I was talking about.
And so I think we should just make sure that nothing we're doing is inconsistent with those. The one that jumps out at me, and I think in retrospect we might have worded this different, we say in policy 9.6, one-time revenues. This is in the capital management policies. One-time revenue should be transferred into the CIP fund at the end of a biennium. So technically, we're taking a one-time revenue in the mid-biennium and allocating it to a specific project. I'm not sure there's anything wrong with it, but I think we just need to go through this, what we're looking at doing, and with an eye towards what we said in our policies a couple months ago. That's all I had.
Mike?
So I think Mayor went to it also, but the Providence has these community partners breakfasts and lunches every once in a while. It was a great presentation this time. I really enjoyed it. It was several different people, several different people from different organizations talking about the things that are being done around the problem of the police get stuck with the phone call that says you got to deal with somebody who is sick or hurt or on drugs or doing something or other, and they end up at the ER, and that isn't the best place to serve them. And so they're talking about the programs that are going in, have been put in place, particularly some of the pilot programs with respect to some of the sheriff riding with a social worker kind of things. And it sounds like some other cities are doing some of those pilots. And it was interesting at the top level to hear that those sound like positive results. So I encourage us to keep on top of that and watch what's going on. The big cities like Everett and the county are doing it. We're just little old Mill Creek. But if there's opportunities for us to tag on to the good things they're learning, it'd be great. I was impressed by what they've done. Also to hear about what they put in at the Carnegie Center. I can't remember the right name for it. It was the something Diversion Center. Diversion Center has a lot of great programs. I took the list that they gave us and went over and took to the Senior Center. For a lot of the folks that are over at the Senior Center, they're a little bit harder to make ends meet, and some programs that kind of one-stop shopping for some of those things that some of those folks probably didn't know about. So the Senior Center appreciated that. And Gina, we've already embarrassed you enough, but I want to thank you for supporting us for all this time, but also want to thank you on behalf of Snohomish County Cities. The couple of years we were helping out with that, you took on some really hard tasks, and you and I tore our hair out together, and you put some of my hair back, and all of your hair didn't get destroyed in the process. But we made it through, but fantastic job. I've always found, working with Gina, that it's been great, her process-oriented approach to things and how do we make things better, and if we make a mistake, that's okay, we're just going to go on from there. The mistake we got ourselves in with PayPal was incredible. And Gina spent a lot of time, we collectively, not you, we, Snohomish County Cities got ourselves in trouble. And dealing with PayPal is difficult. And Gina took that on, and we really appreciate that as service to cities overall, but particularly when you were supporting me. Thank you for that. Thanks.
Okay, so planning schedules there, the design review board things are there, audience communication going once, twice, okay with that. We are going to recess to executive session.
Mayor,
to review, yes.
Only for item one. Item two we're going to remove.
Okay.
And I'll only need less
How
than 10 minutes.
How long do we
minutes.
Need for less than
10?
Oh, my gosh.
Possibly five.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. 10 minutes.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to recess to executive session to review the performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1G and action.
There will be no action.
There will be no action. Okay. We're in executive session.
Till 7:45?
Till 7:45? Yeah, till 7. Well, I said up to 10 minutes.